One of the things that was really important for our company was answering the why question, why we're doing this, why they wake up every morning and go to work, why they work the extra hours, all those things. That helps people connect to, you know, the daily effort, the weekly effort, the monthly effort, when they're tired at night and going, why am I spending so many hours working on this business? They can answer why.
Welcome into Studying Success. On this podcast, I interview investors and entrepreneurs who tell us about their life, the ins and outs of their industries, and the different ways that they have found success. Hi, Tom. It's so great to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Will. I'm excited to be here.
So could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, my name's Tom McLeod, and I'm the founder of Zenlist. And Zenlist is an online platform for home buyers to collaborate with their real estate agent to find homes and ultimately buy a home. Mm-hmm. And I'm a Midwesterner. So I was born in Chicago, and my dad was a corporate CEO. So I had firsthand knowledge of my dad and how he ran businesses. And it occurred to me that that was something that was of interest to me, to run a business. And ultimately, when I got into my career, I realized I really wanted to start a business. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania. I played football. And then in the spring of my senior year, I got a job that brought me to California to work for an education startup that was doing supplementary education for kids. It kind of got my feet wet. Learning to work in an early stage company, which was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked for two or three early stage companies, you know, Silicon Valley type companies in software and hardware for a good 10 or 12 years. And again, got a stiff dose of learning of how software, the technology world works. I was doing primarily sales and running sales teams. And then when I was about in my late 30s, I decided it was time for me to start a business.
Could you tell us a little bit more about your experience in Silicon Valley?
Yeah, I was a little bit naive, you know, in my early 20s when I got out here on business in general. But it was really eye-opening to see the pace of innovation happening out here. I got out here in 1998. And then in 2001, there was a technology recession. So I went through that. The things that really stood out to me in that era were the sheer volume of businesses being started in technology, in internet technology, in SaaS, and the amount of smart people out here competing in those businesses. It was really eye-opening. I also learned that the pace of technology is such out here, and now it's kind of a permanent thing, that you really, really need to move fast when you have a product that has potential, because the ability to copy products or create fast follower companies, that happens all the time. So when you feel like you got the tiger by the tail in an early stage company, you just have to move as fast as humanly possible. I really feel like all that experience that I got in those early stage companies really formed my thinking on the type of company and the type of culture and the type of values I wanted to infuse in a company if I ever started one.
What was your job like in Silicon Valley? Like, what was the day-to-day of your job?
I was always in sales organizations. So I was always hustling to, you know, achieve goals and build teams and hire people. And I started out as an individual performer, you know, where I was a individual salesperson, and then I grew into like a sales leadership role, and then I grew into like chief revenue role. And it was always very fast, you know, for each of those companies, the sales organization is the engine of the business. So, and in Silicon Valley, it's grow or die. So you really had to be very, very aggressive in your growth strategy and the people behind it. So it came with a lot of expectations, a lot of stress, a lot of reward. I think the biggest challenge that I always faced was finding the right people. We talk about it a lot at our company. There's missionaries and there's mercenaries. And mercenaries will follow the paycheck and go to whatever company kind of pays them the most money. And sometimes they're the tremendous producers. And then there's missionaries, you know, people who really connect to the mission of a company. And they can be tremendous producers or not good producers. So I think you want a blend of the two, you know, and those are hard to find, in my experience. People that really connect to your mission and will just, you know, climb over barbed wire to help you build your business. So we spend a ton of time interviewing people and trying to find the right people. And it's really hard, especially in this competitive marketplace. I mean, it's really hard to find anybody, engineers, salespeople, executive team members. So we spend a ton of time interviewing people. And we've taken the approach of Amazon, where Amazon has a very robust interview process. And we've kind of poached a lot of their practices. And we've been lucky, knock on wood, that we've been able to hire a ton of great people.
What are some of those practices?
We do it where there's always somebody who owns a hiring. So let's say we need a new front-end developer for our mobile application. We'll say, okay, this person will report to this person. This new hire will report to this person. So that person owns the hire. But we want to make sure there's tremendous buy-in from other people that will collaborate with this new hire. So we want to make sure they interview with all those collaborators or as many of them as possible. And then we anonymously rank those prospective employees. We anonymously do it. So we don't influence. I don't call up one of my colleagues and say, hey, I just interviewed Sarah Smith. She was great. What did you think of Sarah Smith? Instead, I anonymously rank how I felt about Sarah Smith, and everybody else who interviews her does the same. And then we review those rankings anonymously. And then we say, okay, well, we all felt similar about Sarah Smith, so let's take her to the next level of interviewing process and then ultimately decide whether we're going to make an offer or not. We just don't want to influence objective opinions about people. So just because I like her doesn't mean my other colleagues should like her because I did. So we try to remain very objective about that.
Can you talk about what Zenlist does and what's the mission of Zenlist that you have been talking about?
Our mission is to create a community around real estate. A lot of people are familiar with Zillow or Realtor.com or Redfin. There are these public domain websites that allow consumers to search for homes. And that's all fine and good, and there's value to that. But what those sites don't allow you to do is collaborate with your co-buyer, your real estate agent, and your lender, your mortgage lender. So what Zenlist does, we put all the listings that are for sale in Austin, Texas, or the Bay Area of California on our site and in our applications, but it's controlled by agents. So the agent, the real estate agent, invites their home buyer onto Zenlist to collaborate around the home buying experience. And when they do that, they have a private platform where they can collaborate with their agent, they can collaborate with their lender, the home buyer can collaborate with their co-buyer. So I always buy houses with my wife, and we like to see what each other's looking at. So it's really just that. It's a collaborative platform to buy homes. And we're building this community around it where it's a little bit like Facebook, Will, where agents and their home buyer can chat and share listings and schedule tours to look at homes. But it's all contained in this private ecosystem between the different collaborators.
What do you think is important to keep in mind, or what is important to find success in the real estate market and the market that your business is in?
We think it's really important to build an online experience that helps people get to an end sooner. We're a little bit different, where we're not like Instagram or Zillow, for that matter, where we just want people on our website kind of hanging out. We service real estate agents who are trying to help home buyers get to an end, right? They're trying to buy a home. And then once they buy the home, oftentimes they go away and stop using Zenlist, the home buyer. Oftentimes they stay on it just because they like to look at the market. So it's our challenge is to build valuable online experience for both the home buyer and their agent. So you've heard of the term enterprise software. That's building software experiences for businesses. That's really what we do. We build software that's experience for agents. And then the agents share our experience with their consumers by inviting them onto Zenlist to collaborate on the home search process. So we have a challenge. We have a dual challenge. We have to build an experience that the enterprise likes and the consumer likes. And so we've got two different teams that look at how to engage the consumer and how to engage the enterprise on the same platform. So if we said to ourselves when we started this, Will, we said, if we only build an experience that the enterprise likes, we'll fail because consumers won't like it. And vice versa. If we only build an experience that the consumer likes, but the enterprise doesn't like, we'll fail. So we really made it a big challenge for ourselves that we had to build both experiences to accommodate the needs of both audiences, agents and consumers. So the thing about Zillow is you can go on and look for homes, but once you need to actually go tour a home or make an offer on a home, it's not connected to anybody else. Right? It's not connected to your real estate agent or your lender. So that's where we come in.
So in some way, Zenlist is like a social media platform.
100%. We think of ourselves as a social media platform in real estate. So that's exact. And Will, you know, every time you get online, like when, I don't know, maybe you do group projects with other students at your school or whatever it is, you're always collaborating, right? On Google Docs or Facebook or whatever. You're in a collaborative ecosystem. So buying a home is a really collaborative experience. So that's how our platform is different than others. It involves all the collaborators on the same platform.
And have you taken, similar to what you did with Amazon's hiring practices, have you taken any practices of the massive social media platforms like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter to incorporate into the experience?
We do. We kind of beg, borrow, and steal a lot of the engagement features on those platforms. So on Instagram, as an example, you know, you can add notes or messages underneath a post. On Zenlist, you can do the same. So you like 123 Main Street in Austin, it's for sale. You can make a note, I love this kitchen, or I want to go look at this property, and the other collaborators that are working with you on Zenlist see that. So it becomes very social media-like, you know, where you're talking about content related to real estate on our platform. And it's important to mention, it's not in the, we don't have a public website that you go to and search around. So everything's in a private experience between you and your collaborators. But we think about it all the time. Our head of product is constantly looking at Discord and, you know, Instagram and Slack and all these applications that allow people to collaborate and asking, you know, saying, what can we do to pick from the best engagement practices of these other companies?
What do you think is the biggest challenge that your business has to conquer in this industry?
Well, the biggest challenge that we have as a business is finding people. So it's not even an industry challenge. We've got some industry challenges. I'll touch on that. But it's finding people. So finding engineers, finding product managers. Mm-hmm. It's really competitive to find those people. In the industry, mm-hmm. I think our biggest challenge is just getting people to adopt a new product is hard. Even if it's super easy to use, if it's super valuable, it's still hard because adults, the older you get, you're more resistant to change as a human being. The older you get, you're a little bit resistant to learning new things. So we're fighting more human nature than anything else. So if you're used to using, you know, Gmail for your email, and somebody comes and says, well, why don't you use this email client? You might say, I don't want to learn something new. At your age, you should be very open to learning new things. But the older you get, you're just a little bit more mm-hmm. resistant to it. So we're fighting human nature.
How do you fight human nature? What's the process of getting people to accept your product?
So we hired a team of people, and all they do all day, every day, is engage our clients, our agents, our real estate agent clients who are paying for our software, and they train them and offer best practices. And we very much believe in real-time customer service. So anytime an agent is on our platform, whether it's on web or mobile platform, they can hit up our customer service time in real time, customer service team in real time. And they're right there to help them with their problems or offer training. So we kind of overdo helping them learn our product.
I think it was Peter Thiel who said, for somebody to adopt a new product, it has to be 10 times better than the existing product. Do you agree with that?
I do. I do agree with that. I agree with it because, again, human nature, it often dismisses, oh, there's something better out there. And there's kind of a curve of adoption of new things, right? There's early adopters that are always looking for new things. And if they try lots of different products, but if it's not 10 times better, they'll be like, oh, I tried it. It wasn't that great. And then there's like your middle adopters that only do it after the early adopters have validated the product. And then there's laggards, you know, they only do it, they come kicking and screaming. So I fully agree. I also don't think it's not worth all the effort of building a company if you don't think you can do something that's 10 times better. It's too much work. And if you're just building a product that's slightly better or even 5 times better, you're less likely to have success. And fortunately, we're in a space where there's been very little technology built for agents to do their jobs better, to collaborate with their home buyers. So we feel like we have a long way to go, but we feel like we're on that path of being 10 times better.
What is the process of doing business to business sales?
In every early stage business I've been in, they're founder-led sales companies, right? So whenever you're selling to a business, you're selling to another business owner, or another business leader. And when you're an unknown, when you're a new thing, that business leader or that business owner wants to hear from the founder of this business. So for a long time, mm-hmm. I was doing all the sales because the only people that we were selling to, the only person they would believe was me, because I was the one who put the company together, put the vision together, and we built a product behind it. So we're now just getting out. We hired a sales team, and one of their challenges is having the deep-seated passion that myself and my co-founder and some of our executive team members have about our product. You know, a lot of salespeople are numbers driven. They're trying to get to their number and achieve their goal, but they oftentimes don't have the passion or conviction that I would have or my co-founder has. So that's a challenge. Transitioning from a founder-led sales company, early stage company, to a more mature company and hiring salespeople that can really, you know, imbue the values of the founders. It's a challenge.
Switching gears a little bit, do you have any resources that you recommend, like books, podcasts, blogs, anything like that?
Yeah, I do. Well, my favorite is the How I Built This podcast. Well, one, I love doing this. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you start companies, like I said, but it's not as glamorous as you make it out to be. You know, you read a book about these wild successes. I read the Phil Knight book, Shoe Dog, which was outstanding. But a lot of people only pay attention to Phil Knight being this very successful entrepreneur. But when you read that book, you realize he had to climb through muck to find success.
Yeah.
And the How I Built This podcast is especially important because it talks to founders and they address the challenges and headaches and dramas and all the challenges it takes to build a company, if that's what you're after. I think it's really illuminating to hear from founders.
Do you have any parting advice for business in general?
Yeah, I'm not huge on advice because I still don't know what I don't know. But for me, it was really important for me to get into business and find out what I was passionate about instead of the reverse, like finding a business that I was passionate about and then getting into that.
Yeah.
So for me, I had to have a breadth of experience to determine what really got me going professionally and have one life to live. So the only advice I have is when you get into working with other people, and if you're inspired to go start a company and you've got a good idea, start it. The talking about it doesn't matter. Riffing on it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Once you get into it, if you're determined, you'll figure it out. But if you never start, you'll never figure it out.
Thank you so much, Tom, for coming on the show. It was really great talking to you.
Thank you, Will. I appreciate it. Good time.
As always, thank you for listening, and please make sure you subscribe to get updated when new podcasts come out. I'm Will Burkhart, and you've been listening to Studying Success.